This is Grace-Paced Living, a four-week study on our rhythms, routines, patterns, and pace of life. That's what we're going to be looking at. And I want to give you my recommended resources. So these are the five books that I'm primarily going to be drawing from in this study. And if you want to take a picture of those on your cell phone, I would say that these five books have been extremely helpful to me over the last about 6 months, especially the two in the middle, the Reset and the Refresh, perspectively or specifically there. So ladies, for you, the Refresh book, and then men, for you, the Reset book. It's basically the same content through the lens of your specific struggles and activities in life. And so those will be the books that we use during this study. I'm pulling from all of them, and I would recommend them all to you. The one on the far left, The Survival Guide for the Soul, was challenging to me in how I think and how I live. And hopefully you'll see that as it comes out in the next 4 weeks. Well, to begin, I want to give you two sets of words this morning. Two sets of words. We'll start with these ones. Overwhelmed, exhausted, depressed, panicky, stressed, burned out, broken, paralyzed, drowning, empty. Pretty powerful set of words when you see them like that, isn't it? But I wonder, did anyone in the room use one of those words to describe how you were feeling this week? Anybody? Just feeling overwhelmed right now. I don't know, I can't get it all done. I'm feeling a little panicky, right? And you know, those words actually can become a badge of honor for us at times, the way we live our lives, can't they? I mean, sometimes the more we throw those words around and the more we can include those words in how we're feeling, the better we feel like we're doing at working and getting stuff done, and the more valuable we feel, don't we? Here's the second set of words. Peaceful, calm, joyful, content, quiet, rested, refreshed, fulfilled. Compare those two lists. Let's think about the last month. How often would you have described yourself by the list on the left versus the list on the right? This study is about helping us find that life that God intends. And I think you know which side of that list God wants us to be on. It's about finding in the busyness and in the hectic world that we live in, that place where there is peace, calm, joy, contentment, quiet, rest, refreshment, and fulfillment. But oh, there are so many demands, aren't there? Like, what keeps us from that list on the left? It's life's demands, right? I mean, our employers demand things. Our friends demand time. Our kids demand attention. The housework or the house projects demand fixing. The yard demands cutting. The sick demand visited and meals made for. Our marriage demands our love. Emails demand our response. Texts demand our response even faster. Do you have that same category in your mind? Emails, it's like less demanding than texts. Texts scream at me. Emails just tap me on the shoulder, right? Pinterest demands perfection, right? Everything makes demands of us in this life. And as I was studying, I came across this quote that I think is very helpful. It's Brady Boyd in his book, Addicted to Busy. He says, "Ultimately, every problem I see in every person I know is a problem of moving too fast for too long in too many aspects of life." Too fast, too long in too many aspects of life. And if we could boil it all down to something, the big, explosive extreme of all of this is categorized by what condition? What would we call that? When all of this reaches a boiling point and we get the extreme of all of this stress and anxiety, what happens to people? They burn out, right? They burn out. And for a lot of us in the room, burnout is something that only happens to people in their late 40s and 50s. We call it midlife crisis, right? Burnout doesn't happen to young people. I've got so much energy. I feel so good right now. I can keep working. I can stay up a little later. But recent studies have shown that millennials are actually the most stressed people in our society right now. Okay, so this is a study from the American Psychological Association. Millennials would say, that's people in their 20s into their 30s, 39% stress has increased in the past year. 52% have been kept awake at night in the past month from work, money, or relational stress. 20% are in need of medication for clinical depression or for handling the stress of life. So I would say this, grace-paced living is a topic that we all need to think about, isn't it? So what about you? What about you? Do you have that little reality check? My goal during this time is not just to teach. I want to teach, but I also want you to work this out, okay? So we're going to do a lot of projects together, and this first project is a reality check. So wherever you fit on what we've been talking about so far, take a moment and work through this reality check. I'm going to give you about 3 to 5 minutes to work on it, okay? So read through these, and if something has categorized you, or if you found that it matches the way you've lived, then put a check mark next to it. And then as you go through the list, you're working through physical aspects, mental aspects, your job, your relationships, moral decisions, your spiritual life. As you're working through this, I want you to assess your norms and your patterns, okay? So take about 3 to 5 minutes to work on this. And then when you get down to the bottom, go back through your check marks. And give yourself a scale of 1 to 5. How are you doing? 5 being the most intense, 1 being, not always there. And then we'll keep teaching. So take that test. How are you doing? What about you when it comes to grace-paced living? Sorry about that. Oh, okay, thanks. Yep, there it is. Thank you, brother. All of these are interconnected, aren't they? But not only that, we're complex for another reason, and that is because our souls in themselves are complex. What do I mean by that? Well, in his book, The Lonely Man of Faith, Joseph Soloveitchik, he was a rabbi, he describes 2 aspects of Adam that are found in the book of Genesis. And he uses this essay to work out how those 2 aspects are part of God's design for us, but how when they get out of whack, we hurt, we're unhealthy inside. And those 2 aspects are that we are striving and we are soulful. So if you were to read this, he goes through Adam and he calls him Adam 1 and Adam 2, okay? Adam 1 is striving Adam, and Adam 2 is soulful Adam. Now, where do we see these things at play? Well, in Genesis chapter 1, verse 28, we find God giving Adam a command, a commission to fulfill. And he says, fill the earth and subdue it. And with that comes the striving aspect in created man's soul. We were made to conquer. We were made to create. We were made to control. And so this is the reason that we want to produce things. This is the reason that we work hard. This is the reason that built into every human being's soul is the desire to make things that will be a benefit to society, right? This is why medicines are researched. We want to understand how our world works so that we can fix the things that are broken. It's the reason that you purged your garage at some point in the last 6 months, okay? It's the reason that you went through your kid's room with a big black trash bag and threw away a bunch of stuff because you have the striving aspect in your soul. And that comes from God's design. It's good and right. This is how stuff gets done in God's world. But we aren't just striving beings. God also made us soulful. And we see this showing up in Genesis 2 and 3. Because God gives Adam this command to fill the earth and subdue it, to lead and rule. But he also calls Adam to tend a garden and live with him in it. To walk with God in the cool of the day. And the soulful aspects of our being are those that are made for connection with God and then connection with other people. So there's a longing in the human soul for relationship. We are soulful beings. God designed us that we would live in connection to him and other people. Now, as you look at those two words, striving and soulful, which one do you think gets fed most in our culture today? Which one dominates our culture today? What do you think? Striving, yeah. Like 2018 is a really good time to make a lot of money. It's a really bad time to rest and be a good friend, isn't it? Yeah. The striving aspect is the one that gets fed. It's the one that advances. It's the one that gets promoted. It's the one that gets noticed. It's the one that gets applauded in our culture. And one of the books that I read talked about Steve Jobs and Wozniak. Okay, so these are the two founders of Apple computers, and this picture right here actually describes exactly what I'm talking about. So Walter Isaacson, I've actually listened to a lot of this biography, and if you like Apple products and you read Steve Jobs' biography, you have a hard time really liking Apple products after you listen to it, because Steve Jobs is the epitome of the striving soul at work. He made some incredible products that made our world arguably a better place, depending upon which way you look at it. But he changed the world through the products that he made. Okay. Well, there's a conversation that's recorded between Jobs and Wozniak. And Jobs was such a striving man that he was known to forget things, like his relationship with his wife. His daughter is completely shredded because of this striving aspect. He forgot anniversaries, birthdays, ignored them with this insatiable drive to create. Wozniak, talking to Jobs, "Your products are better than you are, brother." Steve Jobs, "That's the idea." Wozniak says, "It's not binary, Steve. You can be a decent human and make good products at the same time. You can be decent and gifted at the same time." And that is that same longing in our souls, isn't it? That's the longing of the striving meeting the soulful in God's good design. It's funny, you look at pictures of Steve, the longer he's at Apple, the more he develops this like really serious face. Why? That constant drive. But God's design is that drive would be balanced out and find its place within a soulful aspect of our humanity as well. And so out of our relationship with God, we strive to create. And when we find this balance, our striving comes alive and our soulful aspect comes alive. You get the best out of both when our life is anchored to who God is and then living out his purposes in this world. And so over the next few weeks, that's what we want to talk about, how to live in that good design of God that is striving and soulful at the same time. But the problem is we are fallen. There's a problem that all of us have been tainted by sin. Sin has messed up every part of our complex beings, including how those parts interact with one another. So it's hard for us to even imagine how the striving and the soulful could fit together. And the reason for that is because of sin. Remember, I told you at the beginning that our problem is that we believe the wrong things. We believe the wrong things about God and the wrong things about ourselves. And we live like God is a slave master. He's a taskmaster, never satisfied unless we are running ourselves ragged. God's not pleased with us unless we're exhausted. And when we are, then we've got him right where we want him, right? Our problem is that we are fallen. God's good design has become twisted. And God has become one that is constantly suspicious of us. And we have become one who can live out our way on our terms to get what we want because we are fallen. But God has given us a better way, hasn't he? We did not receive the spirit of slavery to fall back into fear, but we've received the spirit of adoption as sons by whom we cry, Abba, Father, Romans 8:15. You see, God is not a slave master or a taskmaster. He's a loving father. He's a slave emancipator. He's a law keeper in Jesus Christ. He's gracious. He delights in us. He longs for those of us who are his to spend rest and refreshment with him. This is who our God is. So yes, we understand our design, that we are created, complex, but fallen individuals. We have to remember who God is, that he is gracious, unbelievably gracious. So how should we think? Think rightly about ourselves, think rightly about God. God is a gracious giver. That's your blank there. He offers an endless supply of all we need to live a grace-paced life. So I want you to picture with me an assembly line. Okay, we're all on it, right? And we aren't making widgets or phones or plungers. I don't know if those are made on an assembly line. Just thought I'd throw it in there. Okay. We're making Bibles, okay? So we are all on an assembly line making Bibles that are going to be sent to the far reaches of the world. All kinds of languages, all kinds of people are going to be reached by our work. Now, if we do not understand who God is and what he's given us in his grace, then even though we are doing an incredible work of making Bibles, our souls can be broken and we can miss what God wants for us in the end. And it all comes down to whether or not we understand grace. So this is where the title of the series comes in, Grace-Paced Living. And the first thing I want you to see about grace is that grace motivates. It motivates. By the grace of God, I am what I am, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15. So imagine five different people printing Bibles. Mr. Dollar, as he works those Bibles through, all he thinks about is the paycheck he's getting on Friday. Miss Ambitious is trying to please her boss just so she can get a promotion. Mr. Pleaser, he doesn't even care about a promotion. All he cares about is making his boss happy. The fourth person, Mr. Selfish, all he's thinking about is whether or not he's personally satisfied as he stitches together the bindings on these Bibles to send off to another place. Oh, but Mrs. Grace, she's motivated by grace, and her thought is, in view of the incredible grace that God has displayed to me, how can I serve God and others in this workplace? Four people are miserable. Miserable. They probably bicker. They probably get on each other's nerves because they have competing motivations, don't they? One person lays down their life because grace is motivating them. We must understand also that grace moderates. Grace moderates. Miss Perfectionist sits on the line and she can't have a single problem with the Bibles that pass by her. Each Bible has to be controlled. She takes pride in every perfect one that goes past. And if there's one single mistake, she stews on it all day. She goes home. She can't sleep because she's thinking about how every single Bible has to be perfect. She's either disappointed or judgmental, and she swings back and forth. Disappointed because of how many mistakes she made. Judgmental because she looks around at all the people that she's better at making Bibles. But oh, Mrs. Grace, who knows the approval and acceptance of God, that at the end of the day, her perfect Bibles do not earn her any standing with God. So she draws near to God with a true heart at rest in his work in her life. She knows that only God is her hope in this life. She works hard, but at the end of the day, she's at rest because grace moderates her. We also have to understand that grace multiplies. Grace multiplies. So there's multiplying power in grace. And that is that on the production line, there are several people who feel the weight of the targets that have to be met. And so they push and they work very hard. And they think, for every Bible that we don't get through this line, there's another soul that isn't reached. But Mrs. Grace sleeps well at night. She doesn't push herself past the limits with too much overtime or stress at night about what wasn't done. She realizes that God can accomplish more in 1 minute that she is asleep than she can accomplish in 1,000 lifetimes. Hear the words of Ephesians 3 through this lens. Now to him who is able to do far more abundantly than all that we ask or think. We tend to view that through the lens of prayer and ask God to do big things. Yes, prayer is involved, but there's also rest in our souls in the one who multiplies. Grace multiplies. Rest. Do you see how striving and soulful begin to meet in the grace of God? Grace releases. It releases. Mr. Controller stands over several of you. He's the boss that some of you may face tomorrow. He's the micromanager. He's angry when things don't work. He yells at you and he yells at machines. He may believe in sovereign grace, but he's the sovereign, and grace is just enough to get him into heaven. Mrs. Grace knows that God is sovereign over every detail. And the hang-ups and the slowdowns on the production line are moments to stop and trust in a sovereign God. Because grace allows us to release control. Say, God, you are good and you are in control. The releasing power of grace frees us to live soulfully and striving. Then the last grace receives. You have a list of gifts that are there. Weekly Sabbath, sufficient sleep, physical exercise, family and friends, Christian fellowship. I wonder, have you ever been tempted to say, I don't have time for those things. I can't do those things. I get mad when people talk about those things. Would you just for a moment stop and look at grace? These are good gifts from our Father, given by him to refresh our soulful Adam and refuel our striving Adam so that we can serve him the way he designed us to. Grace. God is a gracious giver, and he offers us an endless supply of all that we need to live grace-paced lives. I'm going to give you some homework. I was hoping to save time to do this together, but on the backside are four sections of questions that I want you to work through this week. You don't have to work through all of them. Just pick one of those sections and then come back next week and we'll see how you responded to some of these things. Love to hear how you're thinking and how you're interacting with these things. But today, as we started our series in Grace-Based Living, we talked about how we ought to think, and that is that we've been created by God to live as striving and soulful beings. And our only hope to live that way is the powerful grace of God. One quote to leave you with, and then we'll go. Knowing we are deeply loved by our Creator frees us to pursue a life of significant, enduring achievement, a life that is not driven by fear and anxiety, but one that springs from a deep well of joy and gratitude for the love and grace that God has shown us. May we learn day by day to live the grace-paced life that God has offered us through Jesus Christ.